two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson from KSLSports.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops, and of course, read me at KSLSports.com. Big week for the Jazz. A couple of winnable games. They do head out on the road where they have struggled so far this season, but they do get a home game first as they take on the Orlando Magic, which should be a win, but, you know, should be a win for the Jazz recently. Hasn't necessarily meant a whole lot, even though they have been winning games. It doesn't look like they've been going out and giving the performance that I think a lot of Jazz fans expect or hope to see. So that is back where the Jazz are and what they're trying to finish here as they get ready for the end of the 2019 calendar year and get ready to jump into the new year where they're really going to have to get cooking. And traditionally, over the last couple of years, I think they have been cooking. That's where these Quinn Snyder teams have gotten significantly better. Now, the problem for the Jazz recently has been the lack of quality bench play. And it's been an issue really since the beginning of the season, but really started to take off, I think, when they went on that five-game road trip that they went 1-4 on. It became very apparent that that bench unit was struggling, and sometimes they'll come out and have an okay game against Minnesota with a nice road victory the Jazz had on Wednesday. The bench played great. It was really the difference in that game. They were all plus 15 or better. I think Emmanuel Mudiay was plus 18, and Quinn Snyder was very complimentary of that group. And then the next night against the Golden State Warriors, Friday night, they were horrendous, and it's a team and a group that made up of the veterans they have, even though I know some of them are unproven players like Emmanuel Mudiay, should be able to play better or at least find more consistency than they have. And generally that group has been made up of Donovan Mitchell has to play point guard right now with Mike Conley out. Emmanuel Mudiay's in the lineup. George Niang steps in because Joe Ingles has been moved to the starting lineup with Mike Conley out. Jeff Green and Ed Davis round out your starting four and five. It's a spot that I understand the difficulty for the Jazz. It's just 25 games in together. Emmanuel Mudiay, Ed Davis, Jeff Green don't know the Jazz system, still working on figuring out the Jazz system. I think Emmanuel Mudiay is asking to come totally reconfigure how he's playing basketball. In fact, on Saturday, or I should say Sunday, he talked a little bit about that at practice, how he's just having to do things, make better reads, different reads than he's had to make in his career. And then on top of it, he's having to play next to Donovan Mitchell. And that's a new thing that he's never done before. So he's having to refigure his career and rebuild his career. And what I was surprised, because if you're on Twitter and, you know, if you're listening now, I assume you're on Jazz Twitter, the majority of Jazz fans seem to be pointing at Emmanuel Mudiay as being the biggest issue. And, you know, depending on which plus minus you want to look at, if you want to look at real plus minus by ESPN, there's just a ton of different options you can look at. One or two will say that Emmanuel Mudiay has been the major issue. And then a lot of them actually like what Emmanuel Mudiay has done, including ESPN's real plus minus, which has kind of become the set standard. And even if you just look at his set plus minus throughout the regular season, what he's done so far on average, Jazz have actually been a little bit better with Emmanuel Mudiay on the floor than when he's been off the floor. Certainly better than their opponents. They're about a plus 0.3 per game when Emmanuel's on the floor. So to give you some reference, I think the worst Jazz player, certainly over this stretch where the Jazz have been struggling with this bench unit, is George Niang, and he's been a minus 3.5. So to be a plus 0.3 isn't terrible from Emmanuel Mudiay. But I've been wondering what the solution for this group, for the Jazz, is going to be and where they're going to find success. And it may be as simple, I was surprised, as Mike Conley coming back. And not that Mike Conley has anything to do with the Jazz bench necessarily, in the sense that he's not going back to play with the bench. I'm not advocating for taking Mike Conley out of the starting lineup at all. It's simply that by having him back on the floor and pushing Joe Ingles back to that bench unit, you can run a lineup out for the Jazz that's actually extremely positive this season. Again, we talk about four-man groups, and I'll let you hear a quote from Quinn Snyder coming up on how the Jazz look at some of these groups. I thought it was interesting today at practice, but the four-man group of Jeff Green, Ed Davis, Emmanuel Mudiay, and George Niang has been pretty putrid throughout the season. I mean, the Jazz are just getting killed when that grouping is out there. But if you replace George Niang in that grouping with Joe Ingles and you add Donovan Mitchell as the point guard, it's actually been one of the Jazz's best units all year. Now, they've only played like 25 minutes together. Now, that might seem like too small of a sample size. Here's what I don't think we realize. Five-man units getting on the floor together, other than your starting lineup, you just don't get a consistent grouping. It's dictated by matchups. It's dictated by foul trouble. It's dictated by timeouts, time remaining in games. Everything. So it's hard to just say, well, here's unit A and here's unit B, and we mix and match these, and consistently all these guys are on the floor at the same time. You know, if you don't get a dead ball from the 7 minute mark to the 3 minute mark, randomly it happens, probably a little too long, but it can happen where you get these long stretches, well, where you want Joe Ingles subbing into the game or out of the game, depending on if he's starting or coming off the bench, or Mike Conley or Donovan Mitchell. That can be impacted by 4 minutes, and then you're completely blowing up this idea of this five-man unit you have. So getting back to this group that has played a little more than 20 minutes together, this five-man unit of Donovan Mitchell, Emmanuel Mudiay, Joe Ingles, Jeff Green, and Ed Davis, like I mentioned, has been one of the Jazz's best five-man combinations this year. They're a plus 48.2 per 100 possessions when they're on the floor together. I mean, that's an incredible rating. That net rating is going to be one of the best in the NBA by season's end as far as teams that actually can play together. And then it becomes a question of how much of that is noise, how much of that is real. And 25 games into the season, there's still room for a lot of noise. And what I mean by noise is, let's say that group was on the floor together for 20 minutes, and in those 20 minutes spread over four or five different games, you know, the Jazz were unusually hot from the three-point line, or the opposing team was unusually cold from the three-point line despite getting good looks. So then you have to take that five-man unit and look at those numbers and compare it to what it actually looked like when they were on the floor together and draw out whether or not you think you can go back to that. And I would suspect if Mike Conley's able to come back in the next game or two, the Jazz will try and get this lineup on the floor to actually see if those stats are accurate, if that unit is accurate. Here's Quinn Snyder talking about how you use that type of data to put a five-man unit together.
The important thing is not to have a bias. You know, analytics can help you see things, help you, as you said, confirm things that you see on tape or instinctively. When we've missed certain players at various times, you know, that has to be factored in. Sometimes one or two players can impact, you know, a combination of guys. So all those things, I think the numbers are certainly useful. You have to get separation on some level. You know, if you look at two-man, three-man, four-man, five-man lineups, which is all the things that we do, and you try to see how those equate to your defensive efficiency, you may have one lineup that's, you know, more successful defensively, but not so much offensively, and, you know, weighing that on point differential. There's just so many things that go into it. And, you know, maybe the most important thing is when you see, you know, groups function well together. And that doesn't always equate to success in the short run, but it certainly does in the long run.
So interesting there. I'm always curious how teams don't just measure analytics, but then apply those analytics beyond, hey, a three-point shot's better than a mid-range shot. You know, how you actually look at two-man units, five-man units, groupings, and kind of go off your biases. And you know, Quinn's great at his job. That's why he talks about you have to eliminate your biases. And I think that's hard to do. Even when I'm writing articles for KSLSports.com, I tend to have some preconceived notion and say, well, I'm going to go into it looking for this number, and this number is going to back up what I'm saying. it is hard to say, well, that's not what I'm going to do. You know, it's hard to go in and say, I'm going to look at the numbers, so I'm going to analyze the numbers, even if they're totally opposite of what I feel like I'm watching when I'm watching the games, and then I'm going to write about that. So good and interesting stuff from Quinn Snyder there. Now, as I mentioned, good news for the Jazz. It sounds like Mike Conley's going to be coming back. In fact, he was able to talk to the media Sunday after practice. Generally, they don't make injured players available to the media unless they're close. And then today at practice, today being Monday, the different players on the Jazz, including Quinn Snyder and Joe Ingles, talked about what this break has been like. And Joe Ingles even talked about getting Mike Conley back in the lineup. Here's what Joe Ingles had to say.
Yeah, we got to have a day off, which was nice. And yeah, and then two good days of practice. And I think I said it last time, we had two good days. It's really nice. It's a bit 50-50 because you obviously want to play and you want to play games and kind of compete in them. But we've had two practices to get kind of more connected on court, have Mike out there a little bit and get him back involved. And
so again, more evidence there, I think, from Joe that Mike Conley is close. And a game against the Orlando Magic, especially at home, might be the ideal place to try and bring him back. And again, I won't be at all surprised, even though the Jazz have yet to update us as of Monday afternoon at about 3:45 on what Mike's status is going to be tomorrow against the Orlando Magic. I won't be at all surprised to see him back. Now, again, going with this weird three-day off stretch that the Jazz have right now, which is only one of three that they're going to get all year. They get two later in the season, which would actually be very nice, including one in the last month of the season. Having 3 days off is a nice advantage because Saturday, I don't think the Jazz did anything. They have what Quinn Snyder calls a lockout day, which is don't come to the gym, don't play basketball, don't think about basketball. Maybe if you need to get treatment, you can do that, but that's what Sunday and Monday are used for. And the Jazz came in and practiced both of those days, and you know, it comes down to trying to fix some of those problems the Jazz have been having, not just necessarily getting ready for the Orlando Magic, but just trying to get yourself in a spot where you're going to have success and fix those problems that you've been showing, which is transition defense recently for the Jazz, which is just, you know, natural ball movement and making sure they are passing the ball around the perimeter because sometimes that offense is still freezing. And then you take bad shots, and that's what leads to those easy baskets going the other way. Here's Quinn Snyder talking about what the Jazz have been working on for the last 2 days.
It's a big thing. You know, you go through a season and you rarely get more than one day off at a given time. And even on those days, most guys are coming in, getting treatment. So there's a mental component, I think, you know, to having a lockout day, so to speak. And then for our group right now, you know, even though we're, you know, good chunk into the year, we're still forming the habits that we need to win. And you know, on both ends of the court. So having an opportunity to focus on those in practice. When the game starts, you know, that's when it's important that they are habits. You know, practice is the time that allows them to become habits.
So there you go, Quinn Snyder talking about the Jazz practice. Again, just an interesting sound, I think, from the Jazz right now. And it's a team that's playing well. They're not playing great basketball, but their record is pretty good this season, and they're going to be in a healthy spot, especially if, as I mentioned, come January, they can really start to put this unit together. All right, let's switch it up. Let's get you ready for the Orlando Magic with our next guest. You can find him on Twitter at Phil R Squared. He covers the Orlando Magic and is the editor of the Orlando Magic Daily. It is Philip Rossman Reich. Let's talk a little bit about this Orlando Magic team. They're 2 games back of 500. They're in the 8th seed right now. Jazz are getting ready to take them on Tuesday night. They haven't been great away from home, just 4-8. Where are they on the season, 25 games in roughly, compared to where you think Orlando Magic fans or where the expectations were set for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a little bit behind where I think fans expected them to be. I mean, a lot was made during the offseason of bringing back virtually, and really, the entire team that made the playoffs last year. Really, the only two players that they've added to the rotation were Markelle Fultz and Al-Farouq Aminu, who's, of course, injured right now. So I think the expectation was the Magic would be able to hit the ground running and maybe stake a little bit of a claim to compete for one of the top 4 or 5, maybe 6 seeds in the Eastern Conference. But instead, they've kind of gotten out of the gate slowly. They had some injuries in preseason. They didn't have quite the training camp they wanted, and then they got hit with a big injury to Nikola Vucevic, who missed 11 games, just came back on Sunday. So the team's been kind of trying to find its way and figure itself out. They haven't shot the ball particularly well, and that's kind of kept them from really realizing their full potential in a lot of ways because, you know, the point of the game is kind of to score, and they've struggled to do that. But, you know, Orlando is still kind of where they want to be. They're in the playoff hunt. They're hovering around 500. You know, they were able to survive without Vucevic for 3 weeks. And so I think the Magic really feel like that they're in a position where that they can start growing and start finding their footing once again to make a little bit more noise in the Eastern Conference and maybe climb the standings a little bit.
We're in that weird part of the season now where trades just opened up again for players that you signed in the offseason. That was December 15th. So teams can really start to decide what the future of their season looks like. Do they want to start making trades and blow it up and start tanking? And we're going to see that with teams like the New York Knicks. Or do you become a buyer and you try and get better ahead of the trade deadline when, you know, a lot of these deals end up getting done, but maybe you can get a discount or a better player if you go earlier on. What are the Orlando Magic looking to do this season? What's the goal of the rest of the year, and what do they try and do before that trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Magic are in an interesting spot in that respect because of that. You know, they're a team that made the playoffs last year and have aspirations to do a whole lot more. But they're also still a really young team. I mean, their key players, you know, that for their future at least, are Jonathan Isaac, who's, you know, 21, 22 years old, Markelle Fultz, who's 21, 22 years old, and Aaron Gordon, who's 23, 24 years old. They've got some nice veterans in Nikola Vucevic and Evan Fournier that kind of keep the team steady and keep them competitive and keep them winning. And for now, the Magic really feel like winning is the most important thing, with those young guys helping them win and get to the playoffs. So I don't know if the Magic are necessarily going to be buyers or sellers at this trade deadline. I think that the Magic really are a team that wants to kind of confirm what they did last year and make the playoffs again, and then look at ways to really improve the roster in the offseason through trades, perhaps, because, you know, they won't have a ton of cap room to spend this summer. There will be big decisions. If the right deal comes along, I don't think the Magic will pass that up. But for now, I think the Magic are really happy to let their young guys grow and get that playoff experience for a second straight year.
How's the Markelle Fultz experience worked out?
It could not be working out any better. You know, he is, I think the expectations for him were a little low, you know, at least internally. Like, they didn't want to rush ahead of themselves. But by, you know, 5-6 games in the season, he had already taken over the starting job. It was clear that he made the team a lot better. He played with a lot better pace than D.J. Augustine did, and really got the team going. They need his ability to work off the dribble and get to the basket. And so while he's had a little bit of inconsistency scoring-wise, it's really the kind of inconsistency that you'd expect from a player who's really going through the NBA for the first time this year. I know it's his third year in the league, but you almost have to treat him like a rookie because he just hasn't been through the rigors of the NBA season before this year. And so I think that the Magic have been really, really pleased with Fultz. He's had some really impactful games. He's, you know, won them a few games with this play and then really taken them to another level. And so while there's still some inconsistency there that you would expect from a young player, he's been a big surprise and a big star for the team so far.
Aaron Gordon's a part of that funny draft class now that we look back at, where Wiggins and Parker and Dante Exum were supposed to be superstars, and then they ended up slipping around and moving around, and no one's really been great, and Wiggins is overpaid, and Parker's bounced around, and Exum's always injured, and Aaron Gordon's kind of maybe sneakily emerged as the most consistent piece out of that, but even then, he's at, you know, 13 points a game. He's not a star by any stretch. Has the expectations for Aaron Gordon in Orlando, are they set in an accurate spot right now? Because I'll tell you, Jazz fans are still waiting for Dante Exum to take off and become this next level star, and it's not going to happen. Where do Magic fans think Aaron Gordon is? Where is he supposed to be? How do they treat him?
It's really interesting. You know, expectations are always kind of a moving target. I think last year, you know, Gordon was a pleasant surprise as just a really consistent player who made the right play, who kind of fit into his role, and when the big game came along, he had the big game. And this year, he hasn't quite lived up to those expectations. I think a lot of fans expected him to be the guy that kind of took the leap to stardom. I think that a lot of people, myself included, thought this would be the year that Gordon would put all the pieces together, be a more solid offensive player, be someone who can keep the ball moving, and be a potential all-defensive team player. And while I think his defense has been as good as advertised, and I think he's probably the Magic's best individual defender, his offense has left a lot to be desired. It feels like sometimes he tries to isolate too much, he tries to work too much off the dribble, when he's really more successful kind of working off cut and working in transition. And the Magic haven't quite been able to use him in the right way, and Gordon's kind of taken himself out of the offense sometimes by trying to freelance a little bit too much, and you know, I think the shooting percentages show that. So, you know, Gordon hasn't quite lived up to expectations, and, you know, with Jonathan Isaac, you know, showing that he can be a real difference maker on both ends of the floor, to be honest, you know, Gordon's future with this team is starting to feel a little bit in doubt as the team looks for ways to get a whole lot better.
How have some of the younger players that they've picked up, specifically Jonathan Isaac. How has he worked out? And then the other name that is one of the best names in the NBA, and you know, this trend of drafting centers out of Texas looks like it's hit very well for most teams, but maybe not with Mo Bamba. What are those two players? What have they done for the Magic?
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Isaac came in and you know, he had the injury his rookie year that really eliminated a lot of his rookie season, and he's just kind of had to find his way. And this year, it really feels like he has hit his stride. I think he's still leading the league in blocks. He's leading the league in stocks, which are blocks and steals combined, and he's been a defensive monster for this team. You know, for a team that doesn't have a great rim protector at center, he's been a rim protector as a wing. I mean, you know, if someone Jazz fans may or may not know, the last wing player to lead the league in blocks was Andre Kirilenko, I believe, in the mid-2000s. So it's been a long time since someone has been a dominant defensive force like that at the rim, from a wing position, from a perimeter position. And Jonathan Isaac is flirting with that. And, you know, I think Kirilenko is honestly a pretty good early comparison for him as far as ways that he plays. I mean, he's opportunistic, looking for shots. He's not quite attacking off the dribble yet. And so I think the Magic are still looking to get a little bit more from him offensively, but happy with whatever offense they get from him because he's such a dominant player defensively. As for Mo Bamba, you know, Bamba struggled a lot last year. He's just physically not quite ready for the NBA, I think. And he's put on some muscle, but he's still kind of getting the rigors of the NBA down. He's playing with a lot more confidence right now, though, and he's playing really, really well. He's able to hit from the outside, which I think is a big benefit for him. But defensively, he's showing flashes of what he can be. And so I think the Magic are staying patient with him. They're not quite giving up on him yet. They knew he was going to be a little bit of a project, especially because he had to put on so much muscle and then physically get ready for the NBA. But he's starting to show signs that he can be a difference maker for the team.
Jazz are catching the Magic on second game of a 4-game West Coast road trip. Well, what were the expectations? They beat the Pelicans in game one, which the Pelicans haven't been very good this season. They traveled to Salt Lake City, they traveled to Denver, and then they traveled to Portland.
Yeah, I think the Magic should go into every one of those games thinking that they can win. Will they win all those games? Probably not. I mean, like you said earlier, they're struggling a little bit on the road, and even more so, they're struggling against teams with winning records. I think the Magic to this point only have one win against a team with a winning record so far this season. I believe they're 11-3 against teams with losing records. At 12-14, you can do the math on the other end of that. So the Magic do have to prove that they can play against elite teams. They're obviously working Nikola Vucevic back into the lineup after an 11-game absence, and that's a big thing for them too. So they're probably still looking to get their footing back. They're probably still looking to kind of tighten up their defense and then get back to playing a high level of defense, which has been off and on, really. If you look at that New Orleans game, for instance, they gave up 119 points. The Pelicans are a good offensive team, but I'm sure the Magic would like to see a better defensive performance overall. So they're still kind of figuring themselves out. And, you know, this road trip comes at a time when they're still kind of getting their footing underneath them with Vucevic returning to the lineup. So Orlando's still got a lot of work to do, I think, on that end. And this road trip's going to be a challenge. And, you know, I honestly think if they can split these four games and come back home, you know, with a 2-2 record, they'll be in good position to pick up some home wins before the start of the new year.
You can find him on Twitter at @PhilR². You can read him in the Orlando Magic Daily, Philip Rossman Wright. Great stuff, Philip. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you.
That'll do it for the KSL Sports Jazz Notes podcast. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. I'm Ben Anderson. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Subscribe. Give us a rating. 5 stars, if you would. We'd appreciate that. And leave in the comments what you like about the show, what you want to hear more of. And we'll continue to work on that. Catch another episode coming up later this week.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.